I do believe that that generation who wants to keep the Holocaust memories and lessons alive, I worry that that next generation won't.
Welcome to Door to Door, a multi-generational story of memory, trauma, and identity. I'm Miriam Terlinchamp. In this 5-episode series, we follow how my family, over 4 generations, metabolized a history of survival, trauma, and hope, and reclaimed a story nearly erased. This is episode 4, Forever Unfolding.
Right now we are next to the city hall of Maintal.
Of Maintal.
Maintal is basically the city that took over Wackenbuchen, and so
it incorporated multiple villages,
yeah,
right?
In the 60s and 70s, most of Europe went through a process of incorporating small towns.
And so Wackenbuchen had, with at the time that Grandpa and Lou and Ernst lived there, had 1,600 people, 20 Jewish families they know of.
We begin by situating ourselves within my grandfather's village, within the broader landscape of post-war Germany. Shifting to the cemetery of the village, my sister Julia brings us into the emotional weight of that place, what it means to see physical traces of a family history nearly erased.
I never thought that my family would ever have any kind of marker like that to showcase my family's history. And so, again, as someone who feels deeply connected to physical symbolism of our history and what our people have experienced, and I think that's the closest we're ever going to get is a tombstone. And given what a tombstone or what a grave means to the Jewish people, and that many of the people who, 27 people in my family who were murdered by the Nazis will not ever have that, to know that we still have some component, some part of our family still has that in our family. I thought it was never there. And so I honestly never knew that we'd have any family with any physical presence that they were there and what that means. And it, I mean, this goes back like generations. Like, it was super cool.
David Strauss, but look at the date. Yes, he was born August 25th. That's my birthday. That is absolutely your grandfather. There's a stone.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. See, David Strauss, aus Wackenbuchen, born August 25th, 1876, died September 26th, 1928.
World War I, too old.
He was definitely in World War I.
He was.
He was?
Yes.
At that age.
Does that give you goosebumps at all?
In October 2024, the city of Maintal, that includes the village of Wackenbuchen, Germany, invited survivor families to return to their home village for the placement of Stapelstein, stumbling blocks as memory markers. Only a handful of Jewish people survived from the town, 3 of them from our family. And so our family accepted the invitation to bear witness not just to the suffering, but also to the efforts of the locals to keep the memory of what happened there alive.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Norbert Biegemann from the Brüder Schönfeld Forum. On behalf of our association, I would like to welcome you all.
Herb Bregman, he and his group are just dedicated to the memory of keeping the Holocaust alive. They're non-Jewish people. They're mostly retired, really nice, and they put up such a great job.
Here's my Uncle Lou's grandson, Neil.
Growing up, my grandfather actually spoke pretty beautifully about the town that he grew up in. The neighbors, the people, the experiences, it wasn't like, if I didn't know from my dad that he was a Holocaust survivor, that he left and was chased out of his town, that his brother was in a concentration camp, whatever else, like, I could have imagined him at any suburban town, even a suburban town in like Ohio type of thing, just put that picture in Germany. And I even know he did this trip, like similar to the one that we did roughly 30 years ago or almost 31 years ago, to Wackenbuchen with the same exact tour guide talking to high school students about his experience there. And so I always thought he actually cared a lot about this town and really like loved it and was invested in. And while he may have mixed feelings about Germany, he at the end of the day, like loved his experience growing up there, besides being kicked out. Like that's always the asterisk.
Everyone needed something different from the trip. Though the invitation to attend was general, each person who accepted the invite had a specific reason for going. Here's Neil again.
I feel like I hold and carry a lot of the stories from my grandfather. I carry some of the stories from my Uncle Simon, and I carry even less stories from my Uncle Ernst. I don't always know how to share those stories. I'm sometimes afraid of telling them wrong or making mistakes, making factual errors in them. And so I go to not sharing those stories and sharing the happiness, sharing whatever else I can. And I think what I really wanted out of this trip was not a keychain or anything else, but I really wanted more of a connection, not just to my grandfather and my great uncles, but also to their family and to my family right in front of me. I wanted more of a connection to my brother about these stories. I wanted to be able to just experience it for the first time in my life of actually seeing their story and not just hearing about the general stories of the 6 million who perished or the millions of others who experienced tragedy during World War II and the Holocaust. I really just wanted to focus on my family of like, what was their story in this town, in this place, and what's that experience and how does that relate to me?
As Neil searches for a deeper connection to the specific lives and losses of his own family, Julia brings us to a powerful symbol of that connection. 4 small brass stones embedded in the ground of public space.
So we're coming up to the stones now. They have to be on public property. And there's 4 of them.
The stones themselves had been already professionally laid in there. What got laid were yellow roses. And these children, young students, they were 16.
As my mother Nadine describes the yellow roses, Julia shows how the presence and voice of students helped bring forgotten family stories back to life.
We get to my grandfather's former house and the students did a presentation. What was I thought really special is we always talked about my grandpa and Lou. They definitely glossed over talking about my other great uncle, Ernst. But I thought what was really cool was them being able to talk about Jenny and her story, because I feel like we always talk about my grandpa, but because we don't have a lot of information about the rest of his family, I never really heard anything like and to be talked about like her. Like even my grandpa didn't really talk too much about her. So that was pretty special for me to hear about her spoken in a way about her legacy and what she did to sacrifice to be able to protect her family. And then we ended up taking some pictures and stuff, but it was cool that the neighbors came out and they didn't speak English, but have that connection and for them to recognize what it meant for these stones to be right outside their home and to understand the history of what it meant to live there and what it meant to us. Here we were, Americans from all over the country and even other countries. My dad and uncle were from Belgium, and we had this international group of people who were tied to this cobblestone street. And for them to understand that significance, that I found to be very powerful, that I don't know how much you think about your own neighbors. Imagine that, like that your neighbors would understand that your family's legacy was right there outside their home, and for them to value that and to care about it versus overlooking it and just think it's just another cobblestone. That part was really, really meaningful to me.
Back to Nadine.
What brought me to tears was not their rendition of the history there, because clearly they had researched it and put it together like a typical 16-year-old reading a set of facts. Beautifully done in English. They were reading it off of index cards in much the same way we used to do book reports, same sort of tone. But then I was reminded that those kids volunteered for this task. They didn't get school credit. They didn't get graded. They didn't get anything for showing up and doing that work. They did it because they thought it was important And I did speak at that ceremony very briefly. I had not prepared words. Another family had. So I did speak, and I told them.
I remember being your age and reading biography of people, and here is the people that really knew the people you're talking about. Oof, sorry. My father, Simon, lived to talk to students. It wasn't always entertaining for the students, but he loved talking to you all and with you all. He would be so proud that you did what you did and are here today. So thank you.
What was so stunning about this day was, number one, that they, who have no connection aside from some geography with the history there, volunteered to do this and bear witness. And that my father's fervent passion was so that the next generation knew the history, were reminded of the history, and would do what they could to not let that happen again. And how amazed and grateful he would have been, as was I.
While my mother, Nadine, reflects on the power of remembrance carried forward by strangers, Neil is struck by the haunting contrast between the village's present-day beauty and the devastating history it quietly holds.
Lochlinbuchan was such a gorgeous town. The day that we were actually there, the sun was shining. It was beautiful. It was warm. I loved walking around the town. It was picture perfect. And I walked around and I was like, this is such a gorgeous town. How could such horrible things happen at every corner? We walked by one corner, and specifically, this is the day that we were in the town and they were doing the reveal of the stumbling stone. And we went to my grandfather and Uncle Simon's house and Uncle Ernst's house. And we started out where the shul used to be. There used to be a yeshiva and a school there. And the tour guide was talking to us about the history, about, you know, you could look at each different store and see like a little piece of that history. And he also talked about, effectively, this is the corner where the rabbi was beaten. And this is the corner where the yeshiva, the school, was burnt down. And this is the corner where the mob was chasing people through the streets of Lochlinbuchan. Like, how could this happen here? But it was even weirder thinking, like, how could my grandfather, who I actually do have some positive stories of him telling me about, like walking through the streets and walking to school and friends and neighbors and community, and thinking like, wow, the town I grew up in is also kind of like this, where I have my own stories. Like, it was weird to actually, for the first time, put my feet to the ground and walk through these streets and try to grapple with, this isn't just a story that I learned about, but this is really my history and my story of my family. And this is where my grandfather walked. He could have still been here. And probably most likely, our family would have had still some roots in this town if they weren't chased out of Germany.
Just steps away from where my grandfather once walked, the past and present converge. As the mayor of Maintal offers a warm welcome to the descendants of those who were once forced to leave.
Good morning. Good morning. Dear family members and guests from Belgium, the USA, Luxembourg, and Israel, dear Mr. Begemann, as mayoress of the city of Maintal, I would like to extend a very warm welcome to you here in our town hall today. I hope you had a pleasant journey. Your visit is an expression of the deep bond with your relatives. On behalf of the Maintal City Council, I would like to express my gratitude. The occasion on which we are gathered here today is a very emotional one for all of us, especially for you, the relatives and dissidents of the Reinhardt and Strauss families. Stumbling stones have been laid in front of their former houses in memory of their relatives. They all connect dear people with their faithful life stories with these stones, intended to commemorate the fate of people who were murdered, deported, expelled, or driven to suicide during the National Socialist era. They are laid in Germany as well as in 31 other European countries and are considered the largest decentralized memorial in the world. Thank you all for making the long journey and finding your way to Maintal. Let us remember your relatives together and set a visible sign with the stumble stones that we must never forget their fate. It is an important contribution to the culture of remembrance, remembering against forgetting. Together with many others in Germany, the association is committed to this. And almost 80 years after the end of the Second World War and the Holocaust, this is more important than ever. I wish you all the best for this day here in Maintal. Thank you.
While the mayor spoke of collective memory and national responsibility, my uncle Ralph experienced that remembrance on a deeply personal level, through the faces, story, and honest reckonings of those who had known his family.
But it was very personal for them because they knew my father, they knew Lou, they knew Simon. They had invited them back in the 1980s to speak to some high school students about their experiences. And they just did a phenomenal job of organizing a bus to take us into town. We met with the mayor, who spoke really nicely about, you know, we can't make up for the past, but we can honor it and remember it. It was very emotional, very moving. We then got a little bit of a tour of the town. They were very upfront about how the synagogue was destroyed by the townspeople. It wasn't the Nazis, it was them. Germany's done a very good job, I think, of dealing with their past. They don't brush it aside. They're very honest and open about it.
Nadine, again.
I was very focused on the speaker, the organizer of the trip, who had a personal relationship with my father, as well as with his brother Lou, and how he was crying during his recitation of the commemoration. I was so focused on that, and jet lagged, perhaps. But I didn't realize that the whole neighborhood had come out to witness this, including the people who live in that house. And I also met a neighbor. No one who was there had lived there during those times, but there was a neighbor whose parents had lived there. And she spoke English well enough, and she heard the story from her parents that her father was told to help tear down the synagogue because he was a plumber. He had tools and he refused to. And they had to flee because they were worried about retribution. They were not Jewish. They were just people who didn't go along with it. That story was very strong and I think took the place of me observing too much the physicality of the place. It looked, on one hand, both cozy and claustrophobic, meaning that the houses are set in different angles and the streets have been, everything's been renovated. So the beautiful cobblestone streets have been replaced. The houses are in typical kind of Bavarian style with the cross, the use of wood in decorative ways. So you can be very caught up in the quaintness of the place. But what I noticed was the proximity. These people lived very close to each other, Jewish, not Jewish. And so when the neighbors turned on these Jewish families, they were neighbors. They could see from across their windows. They had to have been playing together as children. There was no way they didn't know each other. Yet they were able to commit such horrible things.
Actively seeking to remember with accountability and respect breathes room into the possibility for healing both personally and communally, and to take on the mantle of memory, of invitation, and the tender holding of families who are robbed of their lives and livelihood and the people that they loved is heroic. This is Herr Herbert Biegemann, the longtime pen pal of Simon's.
In May of 1977, when a group of refugees, Holocaust survivors, was invited to this town, Simon Strauss and his brother Lou and also his wife Sylvia were among the visitors. Simon was just very personally touched by those stories. Being with survivors and their family members is always very emotional. Each one of their experiences are different. You know, there are not too many survivors left. When people come back who are the actual survivors, it's incredibly emotional. And now that it's a generation where it's the children and grandchildren, and for them it's just a very soothing experience to see that we welcome them, want to hear their stories. And no matter what the stories are, it's always incredibly emotional and powerful.
There is an art to marking memory, and no clear formula on how to do it. How does one memorialize and invoke a living relationship to that memory at the same time? Here's Sarah Weiss.
My name is Sarah Weiss. For 18 years, I had the privilege of working at the Nancy and David Wolfe Holocaust and Humanity Center. I started there in doing programming and education, and then eventually had the opportunity to lead the organization. I do think there is a tendency to memorialize and like, let's put a marker in the ground and say this happened here. And actually, that's what I didn't want. We wanted it to be something living and breathing that people could relate to and that will evolve over time. The memorial is in the activation of the experience, not in the memorialization.
And here's Jackie Conjado.
My name is Jackie Conjado, and I am the CEO of the Nancy and David Wolfe Holocaust and Humanity Center. For a number of years, there's been this tension point in like how much of that needs to be strictly for people to grieve personal loss. And how much of that should we use as sort of a moment of catalyzing for education? We don't always have to be deriving some hopeful silver lining out of this. There is a place just to mourn, just to hold it as a singular event, and just to say, you know, can this just not stand alone as a tragedy, you know, an atrocity, one of the greatest tragedies in all of humanity? So I'm personally still wrestling with that. It flies in the face a little bit of sort of my own purpose in this work, which is to bring people hope and agency. But I think that that's an important tension that as Holocaust educators and people who are engaged in the work of memory and memorial, we have to sit with that tension. We have to figure out what to do with it. And I don't know that there is a right or wrong answer.
Let's return to Wachenbuchen. Here's Herbert Biegemann.
Thank you very much. And I ask you again for a moment of silence for the memory of Jenny Charles and their sons, and Daniel, Simon, and Ludwig.
Here's my Uncle Ralph again.
Seeing the family house that I knew had been in my family for generations. And it was particularly meaningful because I'm sure you've heard that that was sold to buy Simon's visa out of Germany.
So I'm Ralph Strauss. I'm Ludwig Strauss's son. And this is Neil, one son, Aaron, another son, Amuno, Neil's fiancée, who's here, Mindy, my wife. Thank you again for arranging this. This is a really pivotal event in our family's history.
I'm Nadine Strauss, and the daughter of Simon Strauss and niece of Luke Strauss. You reminded me that my father and presumably yours had two favorite aunts, Nina and Matilda, who my sister and I both carry namesakes for. And I, being back here, I'm remembering those pictures of them because typical my father, he talks about how they were very heavy as younger women and during the war having got so emaciated. And that is a theme through our life, I suppose. Thank you so much for everything you've done.
Oh,
I'll introduce the rest. I'm Julia Turlin-Champ. My father, Pierre. Uncle Jean. My mom, Nadine. Jean and my father, Pierre, live in Belgium. I live in Seattle. So does my mom. Grandfather is Simon Strauss. For context, he was arrested on Kristallnacht in Hanau at his workplace. And he was taken to Buchenwald for 13 weeks. And they, in order for him to leave the country, they sold, his mother Jenny sold their house. So for us, many of us in our family have come back here to Wachenbuchen on our own. For me, I was 20 years old with my sister, and we didn't tell anybody, and we just walked up, and we went to the neighbors. And the neighbors, for all of my life, and even through my mom and her siblings have visited here too, have always been welcoming and sharing stories of our family. So for me, it's very special to come back here at this age and to know that for generations, my grandfather continued a relationship with the neighbors who are from here.
As each family member shared names, memories, and the deep personal ties that brought them back to this place, Neil stepped back to reflect on the journey itself, not just as a trip, but as something closer to a pilgrimage, rich with meaning and emotional transformation.
And even now, I feel weird saying that's a pilgrimage, but in truth, it really is. Traveling on this trip and going on this real tour with family, that really did transform my connection to my family and helped me understand so much more of not just my relationship and the stories that I heard from Grandpa Lou, but also, again, those stories I heard about and from Uncle Simon, and seeing their happiness, seeing how proud they were of their kids, their grandkids, their families, how excited they were when their nieces and nephews visited them. It just gave me such different perspective about them and who they were and really what they went through.
The moment has finally arrived. The reason my family traveled so far. To retell our story. To honor the memory of my grandfather, my great uncles, and my great grandmother, Jenny.
Ladies and gentlemen, dear guests, we have now arrived in front of the house at Rübenberg 11, where Jenny Schwartz lived with her three sons, Ernst, Daniel, Simon, and Ludwig, until the end of the 1930s. The building on Herrenstraße 13, what you see, has been little change over all the time. Simon and Ludwig in the USA called himself Lou. They both were able to recognize their house. Simon had been here several times after the Second World War, most recently in 1997 with his wife Sylvia and his brother Lou. I got to know them personally. Simon was focused on a good future and was convinced that there would be a better Germany if persecuted people like him talked about their experiences, and young people listened to them without reservation. Lou, on the other hand, was a skeptic. He did not believe in fundamental change in Germany and suspected that the activities we call Erinnerungskultur, in Deutsch, remembrance culture, in Germany were more of superficial, opportunistic matter of politics. We who have come together here feel a responsibility to disprove Lou Strauss' suspicious assumption through our active actions. The Stolpersteine that being laid here and elsewhere are not memorial stones like the gravestones in the cemetery.
It's a surreal experience to watch strangers tell your story, for others to decide they are ready for you to reclaim your stolen lives. My sister, Julia.
I'm in Wachenbuchen now, about to turn left on Rübenberg Strasse. And we're walking to the Strauss family residence now. There's quite a lot of us. We have students from the high school here who've done research on the survivors and their families. Just been kind of weird to listen to kids read it as just a normal biography of someone from the past when it's someone that you're so connected to. Just definitely hard to hear.
Simon Strauss was deported to the Buchenwald concentration camp on the Flevoland in the year of 1938. During that night, both similar synagogues and shops, which were owned by Jews, were destroyed or even burnt down. However, some data which is shown here isn't phrased the same as it happened in reality. As for instance, you can see that this year says in Basel, which means released on February 3rd, 1939. However, he actually had to pay money to buy something. Simon Strauss's mother also bought a ticket for him to Shanghai.
But also very sweet intentions and nice to see a new generation continue to learn.
The trick is to understand the offering through the lens of best intentions, to understand that healing doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens through choice, to believe that another way of living, of seeing the world beyond the dark shadows of trauma, is possible.
Frau Knobloch ist viel.
There are some Jews who do oppose the places of the Stapelstein because they don't want people to trample on their family's name. So there's that part too. It's not a perfect system for every manner of memorialization. But for me, it's a chance to look down and see something bright and ask, why is that there? To give a pause, to not forget that we are connected to this history. You know, not everyone does this, but for those that do, those stones are fulfilling their purpose.
What a mighty purpose to name the unnameable. Here's Dr. Sarah Crane.
I am the visiting assistant professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies in the Department of Judaic Studies at the University of Cincinnati, and also the scholar in residence at the Nancy and David Wolf Holocaust and Humanities Center. When I look at the way that people talk about atrocities today, I think this is actually what people are looking for, is the kind of moral and didactic lessons. How did this happen? Why is this happening? And what are we supposed to learn from it? And I think sometimes the actual details of the atrocity, actually who's involved, is kind of lost. And this moral impetus becomes the focus. It's always going to be a historical event that we are striving to understand better as a historical event. There are still certain survivor stories and experiences that we're uncovering. And this is what keeps the Holocaust really exciting, once again, as an event. But I think it's almost impossible to talk about the Holocaust as a historical event without talking about interpretations of what its lessons mean today. And I think this is where I want students to be aware of this, be aware of how these two kind of discourses exist together. Like, even when we talk about these remarkable survivors and their incredible stories, there's still always this impetus that these stories we need to carry with us into the future. And this question of how do we do that? What does that mean? These things will almost always exist together. And I want my students to be aware of what they've been told about how these things exist together, and that they should continue to engage that question and continue to be unsatisfied with other people's answers to that question.
Here's my sister Julia and cousin Neil.
I started really talking to my grandpa about his experience at the concentration camp and understanding what happened to him.
This is something that really changed and added a lot to that picture and that image I have of Grandpa Lou, in that I understand, I think, from a different perspective, some of the stories that he shared with us. It also re-energized me personally to rehear those stories, to dive into some of his letters, to look through some of the reports I did in school. And it also energized me to share these stories again, because it's not all horrible and dark, but there is sunlight. There is a real beauty of these streets. And the more we remember these stories and have that personal connection, we can actually keep both Grandpa Lou's memory alive, but also remember that connection to our cousins like Miriam and Aaron and Julia, and why it's so important for us to keep those relationships and those stories alive.
Back to Jackie Canjado.
I really think it all comes back to, if somebody leaves with a personal experience where they feel connected to the lessons of this history, then we've done our job. I want people to feel like this is not over there and something that's easy to dismiss. I want people to feel like this is personally meaningful to them. And that paves the way for it to resonate powerfully so that people can make changes, so that we can learn those lessons and be inspired and act on them.
Following this pivotal experience, what invitation unfolds for our family? Here's my sister, Julia.
There was a Jewish museum in Frankfurt we went to that was optional, like the next day. And we got to see, the first time ever I saw any kind of memorial for my great-grandmother, for my grandfather's mother and his two aunts, who I'd always heard all these stories about Jenny. And then I got really excited to learn more about what questions we don't have answers to, but realizing how meaningful it would mean to me and to my family to try to start piecing together pieces now that we have these data resources that, my God, I just can't imagine what my grandpa would have done with the internet as it is today to be able to help us do family history in a way that we couldn't even do a few years ago. And talk about what a great gift to future generations to be able to really help complete that story.
To help complete that story, now it belongs to us. Ohio Humanities made this episode of Door to Door possible. Door to Door is a production of the Institute for the Next Jewish Future and part of the family of podcasts of Judaism Unbound. Created by Miriam Turlinchamp, directed by Joey Taylor, produced at Monastery Studios, original music by Rich Hordinsky, and art by Katie Kasner. Check the show notes for bonus material and resources. We'd love to hear from you, so you can email us at miriam@judaismunbound.com or find us at www.judaismunbound.com/door-to-door. Stay tuned for our final episode, where we ask the question, at what point does the story become our own? Thanks for listening.